Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Here on the Disruption Zone today, we have got Congressman Andy Barr, Kentucky's 6th District Congressman. How are you, sir? What's going on?
Hey, Leland, how are you doing? Hope you're healthy and well.
I am good. I think the funniest headline I've seen in the last couple of days was on Fox News yesterday, and it said, good news, bad news. Dems reportedly warn pending economic surge could boost Trump reelection chances in November. Is there a... Is that crazy?
Yeah, it's sad, really. It's sad that they're cheering against American success. It's cheering against our recovery. And, you know, it's so sad how political the folks have become with this Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah, I don't want to be, you know, Bob the conspiracy theorist here, but when you consider how the media has acted over the last, like the CDC came out with new numbers on the fatality rates for the virus. And when you take all into consideration, it's about 0.26 of a percent, which is really, in terms of magnitudes, pretty close to on par with the flu. The flu is about 0.1, but when you're talking about these kinds of small numbers, a bad flu season can pop up that high and so on and so forth. So we see this, and I look back and I say, you know what we probably should have done is we probably should have shut down for 2, maybe 3 weeks just to get hospitals ready. We didn't know what it was. That's fine. But once we knew what that data was, our reaction to this should have taken on an entirely different look, which would have included protecting the vulnerable and letting everyone else get back to work with basic distancing measures in place. But when I look back at how the media reacted and how the Democrats reacted, again, I don't want to be conspiracy theorists, but it feels almost like there was an attempt to keep people panicked and to tamp down that economic engine because it was going to give Dems a better chance in the fall.
Well, they're still trying to keep the economy shut down. That's what's so scary. I mean, I have colleagues in Congress, Democrats, who in conference calls, you know, indicated and in the halls of Congress are indicating that they shouldn't be coming back at all and we should keep the economy shut down until we have a vaccine. They keep changing the rules in the middle of the game. They keep moving the goalposts. The truth is we were initially told that we needed to shut down the economy in order to prepare the healthcare system and make it more resilient. As you said, of course, we accomplished that in very heroic ways. And the Trump administration deserves tremendous credit with the Federal Reserve and Congress. In addition to just shutting down the economy, the administration responded very, very well with Operation Airlift, with the use of the Defense Production Act, the surge in medical equipment and diagnostic testing and antibody testing. And the fact is now if you need a test, you can get one. Not a single American who needed a ventilator was denied a ventilator or was not able to get the health care that they needed. And so the healthcare system definitely is much better prepared today. And the biggest issue we're dealing with right now is how to get the economy to recover from this government imposed shutdown. And in many states and localities remain shut down. And in my opinion, and I agree with you, I think we're shut down too long. And I don't appreciate state and local officials who are now saying we need to continue to be shut down when all of the goals have been achieved from the standpoint of when we initially issued those guidelines to quarantine and to shut down the economy.
Yeah. So it's not a conspiracy. I mean, there really is politics at play here. It is tribalism at its worst, and there is political calculation going on here.
Well, and it's also, I think there's an ideological difference. I think liberals just they want the government to take care of them. They don't want risk. They don't believe in risk taking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think conservatives and free marketeers and people who believe in the market, they recognize that risk is part of life, and that when the government intervenes in such a tremendous magnitude that we've seen over the last few months, well, certainly you're going to reduce some level of risk, but you're also going to destroy prosperity.
Yeah.
At the same time, and I actually had an opportunity to share this opinion with the president himself. I said, Mr. President, if they keep the government's, if they keep the economy shut down, no sane American likes what's going on. There may be some far left wing socialists in the Democratic Party, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who cheers the destruction of jobs in the energy sector, for example. But no sane American believes that this is a good thing, what's going on.
Right.
And yet this is precisely the Green New Deal. This is socialism at work. And if you don't like what we've experienced over the last 2 months, where the government has deprived Americans of their ability to provide, put food on the table and provide for themselves and literally taking their livelihoods away, and perhaps for a good reason, for a short period of time to deal with this pandemic. But as it played out longer and longer, that's really what this was the government deliberately impeding economic activity. And I don't think many Americans like it, but that is exactly what the far left wants permanently.
Yeah. Yeah. The Wall Street Journal had an article yesterday morning that there were signs of life in the economy. And personally, I take a lot of heart in that, because it's going to show the resilience of free markets, that as people are starting to get back out. I read a little bit of the article. It was like hotels are starting to fill back up again. There's some anecdotal evidence that there's a lot of pent up demand. I think there's going to be a wall at which that pent up demand is going to stop. And that wall is the 30 million unemployed Americans that are a result of this. So in other words, there's only so much we can accelerate. And so it's going to be a choppy recovery. But I at least take heart in the fact that there is an enormous amount of economic demand that's been pent up, and that at least a large percentage of Americans should be able to get back to work if we don't make any more steps. But what do you make of Dr. Fauci, who's been the doctor of doom through all of this, suddenly backpedaling the other day and saying, yeah, well, if we keep the system shut down too long, it'll be irreparable harm. I was like, no crap, Sherlock. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
It's well, like, hello.
Agree. And I will tell you, even early on in the crisis, I did hear Dr. Fauci, and maybe this was private, but I was in the room when he said this early on. He said, we need to shut down to flatten the curve, but we can't stay closed forever because there is a public health cost to this as well. He was referring to mental health. He was referring to substance use disorders. He was referring to the delay of elective procedures and preventative care. He actually did recognize that early on, but for whatever reason, the media didn't report that very well, and maybe he didn't do as good enough job in early on in the shutdown to say this can't go on forever.
Right.
But clearly, there's not only economic carnage that has resulted, but there is a public health cost to the shutdown as well. All you have to do is talk to doctors who were not able to do urgent but elective procedures, and that has compromised the health of many Americans. Unrelated to COVID.
Yeah.
But the bottom line here is that I don't think the media has done a good enough job in recognizing that the American private sector has really been the hero here. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you think about, private sector doctors who have innovated against this disease, who have given the government good ideas, like, for example, a doctor in Lexington, Kentucky, Dr. Mark Doherty, an epidemiologist, came to me. And he proposed in-hospital telehealth using modern technology and his own creativity and innovation to conserve scarce personal protective equipment and to also protect healthcare workers. That came not from the government, but
right.
the ingenuity of a private doctor. Or You know, all, think of all of the private sector.
Well, the bourbon industry switching over to making hand sanitizer. And then hilariously, the FDA's like, no, your hand sanitizer tastes too good. And I'm like, which one of you idiots at the FDA drank the hand sanitizer to check that?
Exactly. It's the bourbon industry with hand sanitizer. It's also the, think of all the pharmaceutical companies that are already, you know, hundreds of vaccines with 12 very promising vaccines in clinical trials right now, and therapies and antivirals that are being developed. These are private sector actors leading the way, and to the Trump administration's credit, in partnership with their FDA, cutting red tape to kind of clear the way for innovation. And if it wasn't for the United States of America, mm-hmm. I don't think the world would be looking at a vaccine or treatments that will help us deal with COVID-19, you know, in the future.
Right.
So I wouldn't give the government excessive credit here. I would give the private sector a lot of credit. And that's why the government cannot sustainably respond to this national emergency or any emergency unless and until we open up the economy. We
right.
need a private sector.
Right.
And we need taxpayers who are working.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And you won't find me giving the government much credit at all. You were
right.
talking. You mentioned AOC and the Green New Deal. The House just passed Nancy's stimulus bill, which is dead on arrival in the Senate. But I don't think we need to look much further than that bill to determine the proof that they're using politics to try to achieve an agenda here. That was a mess. You know, $3 trillion, and most of it didn't have anything to do with COVID, did it?
No, it did not. It was, in fact, embarrassingly unconnected to the coronavirus epidemic. I mean, you had proposals in there. I mean, it really was a socialist wish list. You had proposals in there to change election laws to basically, and as I read it, to legalize voter fraud, federalize our elections, mandate same-day voter registration nationwide, ban states from implementing, you know, common sense anti-fraud measures like voter ID, legalizing ballot harvesting. What does that have to do with combating the coronavirus? Mm-hmm. And then you had
understand, ballot harvesting is when you go around to people's houses and say, hey, got that ballot filled out? I'll take it in for you. Which is
so open to fraud. Exactly. And so much of the $3 trillion was targeted to bailing out mismanaged state and local governments for their pre-COVID liabilities.
Right.
And, you know, here you have decades of unfunded liabilities built up by liberal municipal governments where politicians promised public sector unions more than they could afford.
Mm-hmm.
And now they want to exploit this crisis to have taxpayers, you know, around the country that were not irresponsible, have them bail out these mismanaged state and local governments. That's obviously not fair, and it doesn't have anything to do with COVID. And then, you know, they wanted to restore this tax deduction for blue state millionaires and billionaires. And, you know, it just points to the hypocrisy of the left that they, you know, they criticized the Republican tax cuts for being tax cuts for the wealthy when they put in this bill a tax deduction that benefits blue state.
Yeah, explain that deduction, because the tax reform that President Trump put in place, there's no way to argue that it didn't spark what led to that incredible economic boom that was going on right before the COVID struck. In fact, this was the greatest economic boom in my life, and I lived through Reagan. So this was the greatest. I mean, we're talking 3.5% unemployment. That was started by fixing our ridiculous corporate tax structure, which was nowhere near competitive with the rest of the world, even countries that have far less freedom than us, and simplifying our deduction process. But when you say blue state tax break, I mean, I'm for all tax breaks, but what was it that they were trying to do that was somehow unfair to say red states versus blue states?
So you're right. The tax cuts resulted in the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years, the fastest, quickest, most robust economic growth in well over a decade, and enormous prosperity for the American people. But in what we did in that tax bill as part of the way to lower rates, both for corporations, businesses, small businesses, and individuals and families, was we capped the state and local tax deduction. And what that means is that we ended the practice of rewarding state
okay,
and local
yeah.
governments
gotcha,
that had
yeah.
high taxes.
Right.
Okay. So we no longer would mask. The federal tax code no longer was masking.
Right.
Or making it less painful for local liberal politicians to raise taxes at the local level.
Right.
And so we basically exposed cities like Chicago and Los Angeles and New York for and places like Connecticut for high local taxes. And no longer could they hide behind a very generous federal tax deduction for those high local tax rates and state tax rates. So what that meant was that you had a lot of people rationally moving out of those liberal cities and
right.
into lower tax jurisdictions. Well, what they did, what Pelosi did in her bill was restore this tax deduction that basically rewarded millionaires and billionaires in higher tax jurisdictions. Now, I'm not against tax cuts,
right?
But it just shows their priorities. And the hypocrisy of them saying we're cutting taxes for the rich when they, in fact, do
right.
it in their own bill for only their own constituents. And
what they found out was the only way to prop up a state like California was to keep those millionaires and billionaires in that state. But if they got exposed for their own high tax rates, those millionaires and billionaires were going to leave, and they were panicking about that.
They were. That is exactly right. And the other hypocrisy in the Pelosi bill was that for 2.5 years, all we heard from congressional Democrats and especially people in the media was, look at the Trump tax cuts. They're blowing a hole in the deficit. When in fact, we saw revenues rise
yep.
by
yep.
$22 billion over the CBO projections because of faster economic growth,
yep.
more taxpayers, less unemployment. Of course, we did have deficits that predated the coronavirus, deficits that were far too high. But that's because we continuously were blocked in reforming mandatory spending by the Democrats. And had we been able to pass reforms to mandatory spending, we would have had higher revenues and lower spending. We would have been able to balance the budget. But here they are. Last week or 2 weeks ago, they literally vote to add $3 trillion to the national credit card overnight.
Right.
What happened to those deficit hawks in the Democratic Party? The truth is they don't care about deficits. They just
right.
want to criticize the growth producing tax cuts that President Trump and congressional Republicans championed.
So you guys are working on a stimulus bill coming from the Senate. I mean, you're obviously in the House, but I mean, this would be a Republican version. What will that look like? Are you going to send more cash to Americans? What is another stimulus bill going to look like?
Well, I think we need some, I think there are some changes we need to make to the tax code to make some of these tax cuts permanent,
uh-huh.
to give Americans more confidence that they can invest and be rewarded by the tax code. We need to continue the project of deregulation. That's very, very important. There are some ideas out there to improve the PPP program. You know, for example, there are certain sectors of our economy that are not going to jump back. I agree with you that if you just allow the American people to go back to work, that's going to fix a lot of problems in our economy right now. But there are some sectors that I think have been irreparably damaged, and the road back to recovery
right.
is going to be longer. For example, retail, restaurants,
yeah.
And some office, commercial real estate is facing a lot of distress right now because people aren't paying their rent. And so I think that there are some things that we can do to help provide a bridge. And I'll tell you what, I do not look at some of these programs in this crisis to be at all analogous to the bailouts that we saw after the financial crisis. And here's why. Because in that scenario, you had the government providing, bailout financing for banks or other entities, the auto sector, for example, that really rewarded excessive risk taking or
yep.
mismanagement. That's not what's happening here. This is the unusual situation, Leland, where the government itself shut down these perfectly profitable businesses. It's not their fault.
Right.
It's almost like eminent domain and the taking, where the government should compensate these people for forcing them to shut down their businesses.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a very different situation, and it doesn't create the moral hazard that we saw after the financial crisis. So in the case of commercial real estate and in the case of restaurants, I do think some additional lending and additional support to compensate them for having to shut down is probably in order. But I certainly wouldn't support a $3 trillion spending bill on unrelated things. And I also don't believe that we should be continuing to extend overly generous unemployment insurance that's discouraging people from going back to work.
Yeah, there's a lot of businesses can't hire their employees back because right now the equivalent of $22 an hour, and people are like, screw it, man, I can get a waiter job anytime. Why should I stop watching Netflix and eating frozen pizza when I'm getting $1,000 a week? Will there be another cash payment to individual Americans?
I don't think that's necessary if we get people back to work.
I agree.
I don't think that's necessary. If we open up, then people can and should have the incentive to go back to work.
Yeah.
And I think that is far more important than a transfer payment borrowed from China to give to people. I think what we need to do is give people their ability to put food on their table for themselves. One other point, and this is very important. If we do have another legislative package, we need liability reform. It's going to be harder for Americans to go back to work and earn a paycheck. It's going to be harder for that small business owner to open up his or her business with the threat of a plaintiff's lawyer, filing a frivolous lawsuit because,
yeah,
someone who happened to show up in their business, 4 or 5 weeks ago, got the COVID virus. I think that the risk of those frivolous lawsuits will keep America shut down, even as local governments, lift restrictions.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it needs to be targeted. I don't like to lift liability. I think, people always need to have that opportunity to make things right when they get screwed by somebody. But I agree with you that targeted liability reform specifically with regards to this, again, going back to what you said earlier about this not being a bailout, this is a government-created economic crisis as a result of this virus. What are we going to do about Planned Parenthood getting access to those small business loans from the first round of stimulus package? I was reading an article about this the other day. They knew they weren't eligible. The government knew they weren't eligible. It appears to me that fraud was committed here. $30 million, I believe, somewhere between $30 and $80 million of the money set aside for small businesses was taken by Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, we were very careful in the way we crafted the PPP program to exclude Planned Parenthood from eligibility. That's why we had the 500 employee or less cap, because we wanted to focus it, number one, on smaller businesses. And number two, we wanted to keep an organization like that ineligible. We don't believe American tax dollars should be going to assist, abortion services. So the fact that Planned Parenthood affiliates were able to get a loan through a lender is clearly in violation of both the letter and the spirit of the PPP program. That's why we need oversight. I'm for oversight. I'm not for a partisan witch hunt. I'm not for impeachment 2.0. But we embedded in the law an inspector general. We embedded in the law a bipartisan oversight commission. And as the ranking Republican on the Oversight Subcommittee, Financial Services Committee, with oversight over the Treasury Department, you better believe I'm going to be asking a lot of questions about this. And that's why I sent a letter. I've already signed and sent a letter asking for a clawback of those funds. And we need to make sure that that situation is rectified as soon as possible.
One other thing I wanted to talk to you about before I let you go is I posted this article on Facebook that the Flynn situation, the investigation into Mike Flynn, President Trump's former national security advisor, there was an article on Fox News. The FBI discussed interviewing Michael Flynn, quote, to get him to lie and, quote, get him fired, according to handwritten notes about some of the meetings that were taking place that included people like James Comey. This is a stunning destruction of the FBI's reputation as being a law and order organization. I'm disappointed that many of my liberal friends who I used to stand side by side, arm in arm with, against abuses like this. This was an area we found common ground. The media and the left seem to be whistling past this. This was an enormous, I think it was a coup attempt to try to undermine and overthrow a duly elected president. I can't even put words strong enough into my description of what happened here. What are your reaction to this?
I agree. And again, breathtaking hypocrisy from so-called liberals. Liberals are supposed to be for civil liberties and civil rights and the presumption of innocence. And when you have a formalized entrapment scheme at the highest levels of the FBI, I think is outrageous. And the fact that the media, who, you know, touted when, you know, the guilty plea of Michael Flynn and his removal as national security advisor early on, and then their deafening silence now when we all come to find that it was corruption at the FBI that led to Mr. Flynn's ouster, I think is just, again, a blatant display of hypocrisy. The FBI is an institution with a very, very solid record overall, throughout its history. It is a very important agency, and to have its reputation sullied in this way is unfortunate. It can be fixed. Mm-hmm. We can clean it up. But it just goes to show that we have to be very vigilant in preventing the politicization of law enforcement in this way. The media's cover up and refusal to report about this is really, really, I think, a sad commentary on the state of the press today and the bias that exists in the media.
Well, we don't have journalism anymore. We have punditry across the board. Everyone has an angle. Everyone has a take. I'm a pundit. But the problem is so much of that punditry is masquerading as journalism, and it's not. There is almost zero journalism nowadays. There's very few reporters that I look at and go, you did your homework. You know, the vast majority of them cloak themselves and hide behind, sometimes platitudes towards unbiased, but it's not. And if you look at it, it's just clear. And that's on both sides of the aisle. I miss real journalism, the real exposing of facts to hold people in Washington accountable. And I just think that's a huge loss. All right, before I let you go, obviously you still continue to work as a congressman, but you've been, like the rest of us, locked down. What's the best thing to come out of the lockdown for you, your family, and how you've spent your time?
Well, I'll tell you what, I am spending a lot more time with my girls than have over the last 3 months. I've got a 9-year-old daughter and a 7-year-old daughter. They just completed through homeschooling, mostly to the credit of my wife, Carol. They completed third grade and kindergarten. And I learned how little I know about third grade math. I'll tell you what, I'm not as good of a homeschooling teacher as my wife is, but that has been a lot of fun to spend more time with my family. And I hope that's the case with everybody out there.
Right.
The other thing I'll say is just being at home and being able to clean up the garage and the basement. There's a lot of home cleaning projects that you kind of,
yes.
You know, I think everybody in the country hopefully is taking advantage of the time to kind of clean through old junk and throw out stuff that you really don't need. It's been, that's been a positive.
Yeah. I've gotten so many projects done, painting, things I didn't think I would ever get time to. I definitely love that. Congressman Barr, we've gone longer than we thought we would, but it's always good talking to you, and thanks for being thorough in your explanation of things. I think people need to hear what was said in this conversation. We appreciate it.
Hey, great to be with you, and looking forward to getting back to a free and open economy and a prosperous future.
Real quick, I wanted to just give you a chance to comment on this. I saw your tweet I don't want to end on a negative note, but we should still mention this. The people, that small group of people who hung the Governor Beshear in effigy at the protest last weekend, I saw your denouncement of that. That was an absolutely horrible, that is, I mean, you know, as a Kentuckian and as somebody who is Irish descent, I get passionate dialogue. That was not dialogue. That was pathetic, disgusting, and there's no place for that in our discussion about how we should reopen. And I want to give you a chance to react to that as well, because I saw your tweet.
Absolutely. I mean, that's just has no place. And, you know, that's not really that's certainly not a persuasive form of protest.
No,
for sure.
No.
And it's it has no place in civil discourse. And so those individuals who are responsible, obviously, we condemn that. We look forward to more productive conversation and dialogue going forward.
Yeah, I just wanted the thing about that is it's, and I've seen people trying to justify it. Well, it does happen on both sides for sure, but it happens from extremists on both sides. And what happens is the media and sometimes we on the right will try to label everybody on the left by the way a small group of left wing activists acts. And then the left and the media will label everybody on the right by the way a small group of right-wing activists acts. And what they did does not in any way represent, regardless of whether it comes from the left or right, does not represent the vast majority of Americans. Most Americans understood yesterday that we had the freedoms we have because of the men and women who passed away in the cause of freedom on Memorial Day, and that's where most of us are, so...
Exactly. No. Well said, Leland.
All right, good talking to you, Congressman. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much. Great to be with you.
All right, talk soon. Congressman Andy Barr, that's enough said. You know, enough said. Later on this week, we got Cameron Mills. He's going to come in. We're going to do a fun one episode with Cameron this week. We're going to do kind of a quick round the table with some funny topics, like the one that most Americans don't remember the last time they wore pants, and that we have found a parallel universe where time runs backwards. We'll go over all that with my good buddy Cameron Mills, who is also my co-executive producer and co-host, when he pops on the podcast. Lots more to come this week. I am Leland Conway. Hey, you can follow us on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. And then on Instagram, it's at Greatly Londo and at The Disruption Zone. We are a free podcast. All you have to do to subscribe is go to Apple. If you are getting us through Apple podcast, please take a few minutes and go review us and say some nice things to us in the Apple podcast review section. I appreciate it. It's a free podcast, again, on Google Play, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. Just go to iHeartRadio's app and search The Disruption Zone. Would much appreciate it. I'm blown away by the thousands of downloads we're getting every week. It's just stunning. But the way to continue to grow this is just share it with your friends. Let's get everybody listening, okay? Thanks for listening. I am Leland Conway. You're listening to The Disruption Zone.